This is the Friday, August 23rd, 2019 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. Results from the U.S. crop tour were eclipsed by new Chinese tariff fears and President Trump's order for all U.S. companies to immediately look for an alternative to China. For the week, September wheat gained a nickel, while the nearby corn contract fell 11 cents. Renewed threats of higher tariffs compounded losses in the soybean market, as the September soybean contract dropped 24 cents. September meal lost $5 per ton. December cotton dropped $1.92 per hundredweight. Over in the dairy parlor, September Class 3 milk futures lost 65 cents. The livestock sector ended mixed as the October cattle contract gained $1.35. September feeders put on 87 cents, and the October lean hog contract shed 270. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index lost 50 ticks. October crude oil shrank 82 cents per barrel. COMEX gold put on 1310 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs commodity index fell nearly 3 points to finish at 393.30. Joining us now to offer insight on these and other trends is one of our regular market analysts, Dan Huber. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
Dan, I want to start off the show today. I think we've got a lot of social media questions that came in talking about the crop tour results.
Sure.
Did the market care this week that we had all of these?
You know, I certainly wouldn't say it didn't care. And granted, any crop tour is an estimate. I do think it probably would have had a little more impact, you know, particularly after the Iowa results came out last night, had there not been some of this other news. And, of course, you know, round two, round three, whatever it is of the trade tariff terrors that hit us once again. But yeah, I think it was a verification for a lot of people in the trade that those USDA numbers that were issued here earlier this month are just not even in the ballpark as far as what reality looks like. So, you know, as we move out into August and, you know, maybe, of course, I'll start feeling a few cooler temperatures and maybe a little more realization that, you know, we've got a lot of crop out there that is probably at risk yet. And, you know, the numbers that we have factored into the price are probably not realistic, or at least in my opinion, not realistic, that it should start supporting us. And, you know, getting past this period of just constant bad news throwing at the market, I think is going to be enough to, you know, just say we'll look back a month or 2 months from now and say, geez, that was just kind of a ridiculous period. We probably never should have been there, but hence that's how markets trade sometimes.
Yes, so. That's right. Dan, since you mentioned some weather issues there. We've also had a good question sent in to us this week that I'm going to throw in early in the show.
All right.
Coming in to us on Twitter from Kendall in Trainer, Iowa, asked how much frost premium is priced into the market, especially considering the forecast for below normal temperatures heading into September.
You know, I would say viewing where we are in the price range for the year, zero. I mean, we're realistically down to lows of what were the lows of the year. Yes, we're better off than we were maybe into last fall, but realistically, you know, yes, we have maybe factored in a slightly lower crop because we know the acreage is not what it once could have been. And, you know, even the USDA numbers did show a reduction in yield. I mean, maybe not realistic as compared to what's out there. I would say there's absolutely no premium in the price right now trying to factor in any potential of a frost. So,
when you look at the wheat markets, obviously the story is a little bit different there. Mm-hmm. They've been following pretty closely in tandem with the corn markets, but they had a pretty substantially higher export sales for this past week. Why didn't the market care?
Well, of course, the wheat is still not going to be the dominant player. It's not going to be the dominant market out there. I wouldn't say it didn't care. I mean, the losses were significantly less, if that can be called a good thing. But losses were not quite as bad in the wheat. But I think that that whole psychology of worrying about trade, the whole psychology of seeing a strong dollar week after week just continues to weigh on the wheat market. It was really in a retracement mode. I mean, we're not back down to the lows we even saw in the spring. You know, we're probably closer than we should be. But that said, you know, we had a pretty good wheat harvest, it looks like, across Europe. The Soviet Union, the Eastern Bloc, those areas look like a pretty good wheat harvest, too. So there's still quite a bit of competition out there. But the, you know, the U.S. is certainly not burdened with quite the kind of psychology that we're faced in the corn and the bean markets at this point in time. But, you know, that said, you know, all of these markets are kind of under the burden of, you know, all the external factors at this point in time.
Yes, definitely. And when you look at the corn market, it seems like maybe potentially they've been probing for a new low or a new bottom? Is that what you're seeing?
Well, I think we're down testing lows, and not that there is a great justification why we would need to go to new lows, but, you know, sometimes you do it just because you can. You want to see, you know, in essence, test the water out, see what's left down there. But I really think we have reached a point in beyond value. I mean, I think the value investors have already looked at this and said enough is enough. It's just a question mark of when do we start stimulating some buying from bottom pickers, maybe the shorts that just, you know, kind of recognize that with the amount of risk we have out there yet, I think we estimated that there's somewhere around 8 million acres of corn that was planted after June 1. I mean, which really says we've got a tremendous amount of acreage out there that is at risk for even a normal frost, let alone an early frost. So, like I say, I think once we get the calendar to roll over into August, those things will probably, I should stipulate, as long as we're not hit with some other kind of a external, a new trade war, a new threat here or there, you know, those factors, I think, will start to come back into the play in the minds of traders and start providing value back into the prices once again.
When you look at the corn and soybean markets, we just keep kicking this can further and further down on yield and acreage and what's going to actually get harvested.
Sure.
When you look at marketing of new crops, do you see a short window for corn and soybean prices to be break even or maybe where corn was earlier this month?
I would tend to say we're pushing it down far enough, late enough in the year that I think the marketing window is probably going to be a little bit wider than it would have been had there just been a normal a bounce up into early July, something like that. We almost did that, but I mean, of course, that got reversed with the acreage report and whatnot. But no, I guess I kind of tend to believe that that if we finally come to the recognition that the crop is shorter than what's been factored into the marketplace at this time, it's probably going to be more of a gradual turnaround. And granted, there's always that risk at this point in time. Yes, if there was a frost situation, I mean, I'm old enough to remember what happened in 1974. And, you know, we saw those late season frosts. And, of course, the market really didn't get excited until late September, October in that year. And truly, for anybody in the physical trade, that's the last thing you want. I mean, it is a miserable situation handling off-quality corn, and that's exactly what we'd end up with, too. So,
when you look at the soybean markets, are we seeing a cap put on what we could potentially see here for a rally because of all the trade war stuff like what came out this Friday?
You know, it certainly has been the case all year long. And you can make the case that why haven't beans broken further than they have earlier than they have. Now, you know, here, if there's been any bright spot in the acreage situation, it has been with fewer bean acreage numbers recorded than the trade really anticipated, you know, all spring and summer long. You know, that said, with basically China out of our market, well, yes, they did have a few beans for new crop in the purchases here this week, but for all intents and purposes, they're going to be out of this market. Even with the news we had out of South America that looks like they think they can pretty well supply the Japanese or the Chinese market, right through the fall. Because of the less demand because of the swine fever situation in China. Boy, it really puts a lid on, even with some weather issues, it puts a lid on what we can do to the upside in bean prices.
What about in the cotton markets? How much of an upside or downside potential do we have there in the cotton
market? Oh, cotton market. You know, actually, cotton's one of those markets that, yes, we've been in a very long downtrend here. I mean, even more so than in the grain markets. I really think as we move out into the 1st of September here, we're probably, where you look at it on the extreme to the downside, we're matching lows we haven't seen for 3 to 4 years. I really think the cotton market could be one of the first that emerged out of this long downtrend here. So,
all right. Yes. That sounds like good news for cotton producers.
Let's hope so, yes.
Dan, we had the cattle on feed report come out on later this week, late Friday. Anything to report there? Anything noteworthy?
You know, I just got to look at the report very briefly there, but, you know, really nothing noteworthy. I mean, granted, I think one of the major things, of course, we know the situation with the packing plant in Kansas really kind of put a nail in the coffin of the cattle here in the last couple of weeks. You know, that said, the other element is, you know, we continue to, you know, at least maintain the numbers, with a slight increase in the numbers. And, when you have it was not a great grilling season, so not great on the demand there. And, of course, now you've pushed the retail side of the beef market quite high because of what's happened in the packing industry. And then you back it up with a slight reduction in overall exports this year, which, you know, I think that was looking like it was going to be the bright spot spot for all the meat industry, possibly earlier this year, that, yes, this could be a potential of a decent year to pick up exports. And we've gone just the other way around. So it's just been here again, one disappointment after another. And, you know, the whole psychology of restricted trade and what that's doing. And of course, now you build in the additional concerns of, is the economy teetering on the edge of moving to a recession, which tends to make people maybe spend a little bit less on those items as well. So it, like I say, it's just been a calamity of errors, a calamity of issues this year that have kept us under pressure.
When you look at the Tyson fires, obviously those were early to mid last week. In the aftermath, then we saw cash discounted $6 to $8 with live and feeder cattle. Are we seeing recovery from that yet, or how long will that take?
Well, I think the futures are maybe coming down to meet the cash at this point in time. But yes, they're going to balance out. But I mean, again, it may not be because cash rallies significantly off of here. We might just see futures come down to meet them and both of them kind of move sideways until we still see some demand build up again.
Dan, you also mentioned something there about a recession, that we're potentially heading into
concerned
a recession.
About, right.
Concerned about it, right. With beef being usually a premium cut, do we see consumers turning then to pork as maybe a viable option?
Oh, absolutely.
Option?
I think you look at pork and poultry both. I mean, they are very price competitive compared to beef at this point in time. So if I think the dollar or the consumers out there trying to stretch their dollar, yeah, that's probably where they're going to go with their spending money on what kind of protein they want to have in their meat diet. So.
And interestingly enough, China has been obviously increasing some of their protein demands because of African swine fever. But I read something this week that said they're trying to speed up the distribution process of some of those subsidy dollars for the hogs culled by African swine fever. Does that indicate to you that maybe China's not going to start importing big shipments of U.S. pork?
Well, I mean, they may not bring in big shipments of U.S. pork, period, with the current environment there. You know, when you look at their pork numbers as a whole, I think they're up about 36% in the year to date. So it's not that they aren't trying to pick up pork. And granted, it's not coming from the U.S., or at least, I'm sorry, I should step back a little bit. Our pork exports to China are up fairly substantially this year, but it's certainly not the lion's share of what they have brought in. Now, of course, what China, I think, they're trying everything they can to increase that production, try to bring production back. And it isn't necessarily pork. I think in some situations they've just gone into what were hog facilities, filled in the pits, and now they're putting chickens in to try to get some meat production back there. They have in some instances really tried to press the pork increase or the pork production to restart it, and then had secondary outbreaks of the swine fever. So it's, you know, realistically, as far as rebuilding their herds, you're probably looking at a multi-year process at this point. So it's not going to be a quick change around, which should keep the door open on imports.
Okay.
But
all right. Yeah. Dan Huber, thank you so much for joining.
Certainly. Thank you.
That wraps up the broadcast portion of Market to Market, but we will keep this conversation going on Market Plus, where we'll answer more of your questions. You can find it on our website at markettomarket.org. Facebook allows you to keep track of many interests, including those in rural America. You can find our links and photos at IPTV Market. Join us again next week when we explore how the mushroom capital of the world is working on an upgrade. So until then, thanks for watching. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.